Last week I listened to a woman who'd written a book about catastrophic species die-offs accelerating around the globe today, a result of climate change, i.e. the result of a system of rule by the few called class. Of course, she didn't put it like that. The loss of the coral reefs, ocean death, the particularly devastating amphibian impact. She'd collected a lot of evidence, and a caller asked, why is it that we listen to devastating reports like this and then go right back to doing what we always do? And her response, as you can guess, is that people feel powerless. And I, of course, objected that we aren't asking the right questions, like why is it that people feel powerless? Could it be that the state forces us to be, structurally? Consider how we're trained to see ourselves as functionaries. All our energy, we're told, must be forced down the right hole, feed the right tube, in order to be a lucky one, quote unquote, who's allowed to feel useful. The story of how our energy is to be spent has long since been made the exclusive province of the state. What do you want to be when you grow up is the only story children hear, the only frame in which they're allowed to try to conceptualize the purpose of our lives. This turf was captured long ago. No one ever challenges that story. We obediently concede to let others lead us. Agree to let others determine the use of our energy, as Plato taught power, to ensure they make be. But look around at where our deference has left us. Look where our obedience leads. Is there really any mystery to our helplessness? Is there really any wonder we're unequal to the challenges facing the species and all life itself? If there are certain subjects that are taboo and work is the one at the core, then we have to courageously face reality and admit that the media silence around challenging the dominant story means totalitarianism is already here, and that it's our responsibility to begin to talk about it. Quote, in 1212, two youthful preachers, one in France, the other in Germany, led columns of young people to the sea, expecting God miraculously to part the waters so that they could march to Jerusalem. Since this miracle did not take place, most of those who had survived the long march returned home. A few who took ship were either lost at sea or captured by Muslim corsairs and sold into slavery. That's from Richard Newell, The Crusades. And the following is from John Boswell. The Children's Crusade invites speculation about the role abandonment might have played in it. This mysterious event took place around 1212, when, according to scattered comments and chronicles, thousands of children undertook to free the Holy Land and marched from areas of France and Germany to points in Italy and France, where the movement dissipated. The chroniclers do not suggest that parents encouraged their children to go, merely that adults, in awe of the holy motivation, inspiring persons so young, allowed them to leave. It does not appear to have been a camouflage for abandonment, although the fact that the movement began apparently among shepherds may mean that the children involved were already on their own in some sense. If, as several accounts maintain, some of them were actually sold into slavery at the ports they reached, it was not by parents or relatives, and was little different from other instances of slave trading involving children, apart from the peculiar ugliness of the circumstance. And that's from John Boswell, The Kindness of Strangers, The Abandonment of Children in Western Europe from Late Antiquity to the Renaissance. The children were and are misled under class, but the earth leads true. And if we, as her living advocates and devotees, help our children to be free, it would be, we would see, a children's crusade designed authentically to redefine work as attending to the earth and learning from her. a crusade to help youth establish a very different future for all of us. Vampires aren't the only ones to span the generations. The ancestors who want us to be free also are living.